Well, it might be good to have the passage that Ruth kindly read for us open before you, Matthew chapter 13, and that last paragraph of that chapter 53 to 58. Well, if you've ever been to a school reunion, you will know what a strange experience it can be. Suddenly the old nicknames are being used, the old in-jokes are being told, and the old friendship groups are kind of resurrected just for one more night. I went to a school reunion some years ago, and reflecting on it afterwards, I realised that when you're there with your older school friends, you are viewed by them and treated by them as you were in your school days. You're not really who you are now, but who you were then. And no matter what qualifications or career advances might have come along in the meantime, you're kind of back on a common level with all the people you were once at school with. I remember talking to one of the guys at this school reunion, and after school days had finished, he went on to study law in the UK and then on the continent, and he was actually working as a barrister in the Tory party's Attorney General's office. But there, back at the reunion, he was just the nerdy kid who never really connected with what was going on in the sixth form. And if he'd started to throw his kind of intellectual or a status weight around, someone would have said, "Oi, who do you think you are? Don't forget we remember you when you were a spotty teenager trying to impress the girls." Well, in our reading today, when Jesus goes back to his hometown, the folk there largely reject him because he's just one of them. And for that reason, he can't be anyone special. I've chosen a title for our message this morning, which I think may have summed up their feelings at the time. Who does this Jesus think he is? But notice how the result of that attitude meant that they were to miss out on many good things that Jesus could give them. At the beginning of our passage in 54, we read this: "Coming to his hometown, he began to teach the people in the synagogue, and they were amazed. Where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers from?" But look how the passage ends: "And he did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith." Now, this morning we're beginning a new series in Matthew's Gospel with a kind of working title. It's there at the top of the screen: "So Near, Yet So Far." And that's because in the next few chapters in Matthew's Gospel, just like these verses here that we're looking at this morning, it tells us about people who get very close to Jesus, but they fail to see his true greatness. And of course, we have to ask ourselves the question: is that true of us? Is that true of us? Are we so near, yet so far? Well, Matthew's Gospel is divided into five main sections, and the section markers usually tell us about the movements of Jesus. So notice how this little section here starts. Verse 53, when Jesus had finished these parables, he moved on from there. That's a kind of a marker between the previous section that we looked at much earlier in 2012 and the new section. And if you just flick on to chapter 19 and verse 1, you'll see the same kind of reference. When Jesus had finished saying these things, he left Galilee and went into the region of Judea, to the other side of the Jordan. So we get these kind of little markers, section markers, usually telling us about Jesus completing a bank of teaching and then moving on to somewhere else. And this section begins by describing some of the things that Jesus does and says, some of the people that he meets and the questions that they ask. And the style of writing at the beginning of this section is basically what we would call narrative, telling us how those who were near to Jesus, who had dealings with him, some of them recognized his greatness, but some of them failed to see his glory. So you have people like in his hometown here, as we're going to see, are so close to him, so near to him, and yet they can't accept him for who he says he is. But at the same time, his disciples are, as it were, having their eyes open more and more and recognizing the greatness of Jesus. So we might say, look, that the people's vision, either the lack of it or the growth of it, causes division in the two emerging groups. And the disciples, for whom the penny has really begun to drop, they go on to understand more and more. And the section ends with a number of parables talking about the new people of God and how they should treat one another. But the question we have to face this morning is, as it were, which of those two groups are we in? Which of those two groups are we in? Is my understanding growing and appreciating more and more of Jesus and then wanting to live as his people more and more in accordance with what he teaches? Or are we so near yet so far to understanding him? Now, that is an important question. It's not an arbitrary one. It's not simply about taste or preference, but it has the greatest of consequences. We all know the story, don't we, of Noah and the ark. Noah the shipbuilder, who invites his friends to join him in the ark, because he warns them a great storm, a great flood is coming, but they wouldn't go in. And then the doors shut and the rains come. And their choice had the greatest of consequences. It was a choice which was made the difference between life and death. They were so near to their means of rescue, and yet so far from seeing their need of it. And just, you know, as the water rose, as the rain didn't stop, as the flood gets greater and greater, it's almost as if they could look at that ark and say, I could have been inside. I could have been there. I could have been safe. That's the choice that we make about whether we understand Jesus or whether we're going to be so near and yet so far from recognizing his greatness. Now, of course, my prayer is that today and over the coming weeks, as we look at these stories together, that we might say in our hearts, or we might even say verbally to one another, I must not miss this Jesus. I must not miss out on this Jesus. Now, I don't think we should be too hard on the people from Jesus' hometown in the problem that they had in accepting him for who he said he was. It was very strange for them to see Jesus, who was so well known to them, speaking with such confidence about the things of God and having this reputation for being a miracle worker. Because after all, if you think about it, this man Jesus, just a few months ago, was their village carpenter. And he wasn't doing miracles then. So why now? And you can understand them asking, where has all this come from? And they knew his family. I mean, not only was he the village carpenter, but he was the son of the village carpenter. And his mother Mary, she's there. And they're a very down-to-earth family. We know the boys, James, Simon, Joseph, Judas. We know his sisters. He's from a very normal family. He never went to high school. He never trained with the religious teachers. So why is he now talking like this? Where did all this come from? You can understand their puzzlement by it all. It didn't seem right. It's weird. It seems kind of out of place. In fact, they found the things that Jesus was saying, what he was doing, kind of off-putting. So it actually says it, doesn't it? They took, verse 57, they took offence at him. And that word offence, scandalizo, evidently in the Greek, is the word where we get our word scandalized from. They were scandalized by him. Let's see if we can understand what that means. You know what it's like? It can feel a bit awkward when somebody who's come from a humble background suddenly gets a lot of money. Or when somebody who's not had much education and seems a bit unprepared is given a very prominent position, maybe a position of authority over us. And we kind of feel that those things have in one way or another been put into the wrong hands. And it can make us feel uneasy, even a bit unsure and insecure as to what they're going to do with these kind of things. And that's something of the way I think the people in Jesus' hometown were feeling as they responded to him. Where did these things come from? Why have they been given to this man? It's a bit weird. It doesn't seem to fit. The problem, therefore, wasn't so much external. It wasn't as if Jesus had said or done anything wrong. In fact, what he said and what he did was good. The problem was not external, it was internal. This man, they thought, is the wrong kind of man to have these things. It just didn't feel right, and they wouldn't accept him. And that, of course, is where the tragedy lay. Because their failure to accept these things from him meant that they ended up missing out big time. He did not do many miracles there because of their lack of faith. And many of us may have read at school, or we may have seen versions of this, a play called The Death of a Salesman by the American playwright Norman Mailer. And the main character is called Willie Loman, and he is a salesman who's constantly down on his luck. Finally, his firm lays him off and he faces financial ruin. It's a tragic play. It's really about the failure of the American dream. But one of the most frustrating elements in this play is that all the time, Willie Loman's neighbour, who runs a small but stable business, has been offering him a job, but he won't take it. Even when he's laid off, facing financial ruin, and his wife encourages him to accept the neighbour's offer, he just brushes it off and ignores it. The whole idea that he might be dependent on a man from his own street, even his neighbour, is beyond him. It's offensive. It's a scandal to think that he'd have to go there to get help. And so he faces personal ruin rather than accepting the offer of help. He's so near, it's the neighbour, but he's so far. It's not an external problem, it's an internal problem, a reluctance from deep down inside. And so Jesus laments the failure of those close to him to accept him as one who has wisdom for them, as one who has power for them. And comes out with that famous phrase, only in his hometown and in his own house is a prophet without honour. Now, I'm sure there are lots and lots of lessons that we can draw from this little incident in Matthew's Gospel. I've just come up with four lessons, and there may be others that you can think of sitting there this morning. I think the first one is hopefully the most obvious. It's this, isn't it? Don't miss out on Jesus. Don't let it be said of us, so near, yet so far. And I suppose I have to say that my fear is that that may exactly describe many people today. I think even folk who have spent most of their lives in Christian circles, even folk in our own fellowship here, this could be true of you this morning, couldn't it? You've been so near to the things of Jesus, and yet so far from recognizing his greatness. And the people of Jesus' town, they witnessed something of his wisdom and something of his power at that time. But if you think about it, we're in a position where we can look back over 2,000 years of church history. We know things that Jesus said and did which they didn't know at that time. We know that he went to die and he rose again. We know that he sent the Holy Spirit and established the church. I mean, look at this. It's up on the screen. It's something you may have come across before. It's called One Solitary Life. It's a very simple description of Jesus. He was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman, where he worked in a carpenter's shop until he was 30. For 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family or owned a house. He didn't go to college. He had no credentials but himself. He was only 33 When public opinion turned against him, his friends deserted him, he was turned over to his enemies and went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 20 centuries have come and gone, and yet all the armies that ever marched, all the navies that ever sailed, all the parliaments that ever sat, all the kings that ever reigned, have not affected the life of man on earth as much as that one solitary life. The truth about Jesus, far more available to us today than the people of his hometown. We have even less excuse to be so near and yet so far. And I think in many ways we just have to remind ourselves how the truth about Jesus is right there on our doorsteps. Bibles in our homes, Bible-believing churches in our areas, friends who would very happily sit down with us and just answer questions about who is Jesus, how do you deal with this objection, explain this to me in song. Don't let it be said of you that you missed out on him. And I wonder if whether this morning, just think about yourself personally for a moment. For all your familiarity with these things, I wonder whether you know in your heart that you're still pushing the real Jesus away to the horizon of your life. May I ask you, just even this morning, even today, just soberly and honestly ask yourself that question. Am I so near and yet so far? Well, secondly, let's put the second point up on the board. I think there's another lesson from this, and it says, keep praying for others. Because some of the people mentioned here who seem to be so oblivious to the greatness of Jesus, who just can't accept him, in later life had a change of mind about him. And perhaps most classically here is his brother James. Because James, we know, in later life comes to acknowledge the greatness of his physical earthly brother Jesus, and James becomes the leader of the early church in Jerusalem. So I think there's a lesson here. We shouldn't be surprised that some who grow up so close to the things of God can remain so blind to them for so many years. But the day can come when blind eyes are opened and the objector becomes the supporter and even the leader. There's encouragement, particularly from the life of James mentioned here. So that's, I think, a second lesson. Thirdly, recognise the role of the, I was going to put the word humble, local church in there. Now, I realise that as a church, whether it's locally or whether you think about the church nationally across the UK, it's easy for us to doubt whether God can really use us. If we simply focus on our humble backgrounds and our humble situation. And it's all too easy for Christians across the UK to think, well, what we need to really make an impact in society is we need a great champion, somebody who can connect with the media. Or we need a great intellectual who can kind of converse on the public stage and so on. And we need that kind of high-profile, talented individual before we can really expect anyone to take us seriously as Christians today. But the way that the God of the Bible has often acted has been completely the opposite. He has taken the weak to confound the strong and the foolish to confound the wise. So think for a minute back to that famous story where the prophet Samuel goes to anoint the next king of Israel. And he goes to the head of the chosen family, and they assume it's going to be the son and heir of that family who will be anointed. And they go through the whole family. It's not him, it's not his younger brother, not the next one down and so on. And they get to the end and say, any other boys? Well, there's one out there with the sheep, but it can't be him, he's the youngest. There's nothing to the lad. And he's brought in and anointed. And we have King David, the weak chosen to confound the strong. And when the early church starts in Jerusalem, and its leaders are recognized as, quote, unschooled and ordinary men, let me be blank, they're the you and me of their generation. Ordinary folk. Not from great families or from great schools, just the Joe Blogs of Jerusalem. But they'd been with Jesus. And as a very normal local church here at Grove Hill, it's easy to think that nothing really valuable can happen here. No true wisdom, no real power, everything a bit half-baked and pedestrian. And we look at ourselves, and we look at those around us on the chairs this morning, we look at our leaders, we look at the members, and we say, what do you expect from folk like this? But you see, God gave those unschooled and ordinary folk in Jerusalem a knowledge of Jesus, which, quote, turned the world upside down. He took the foolish to confound the wise. Now, I think that one of the lessons from what we've been looking at this morning is this. Shouldn't we anticipate something similar still today? If we have been with Jesus, if we have understood something of his wisdom and his power, might not we also have an impact on the world around us? Even here in South Woodford, even here in London, one of the great metropolises of the world. You see, if he can take a shepherd boy and make him king, if he can take oiks in Jerusalem and cause them to turn the world upside down, he can take the likes of us and use us for his glory. Recognise the role of the humble local church. And then finally, just come near to Jesus today. Because I want us to end by just realising in this story how near he came to us. We sometimes sing that line, don't we? From heaven you came, helpless babe, entered our world, your glory veiled, not to be served, but to serve and give your life that we might live. How can we know that God is really interested in us this morning? Because he came as one of us. He didn't come as a king. He didn't come as someone mighty, a champion, not one of the winners of the world. He came as a village lad, the carpenter, Mary's boy. We know his brothers and sisters, normal, down-to-earth people. He came to us because he still loves us in spite of our rejection of him so far. He came to us because he still sees a future for us in spite of all our wasted past. He came to us because he was going to represent us, to take our place upon the cross, to take the punishment in our stead. Can we just leave with that thought in our minds? He came so near. A village lad, taking on humanity and it's all its basic qualities. He came so near, the dust between his toes. He came so near. Isn't it time you did the same? Well, let's just pause for a minute before we sing our final song together. Thank you.